So another thing on the timeline, going forwards a couple of years, was up the valleys. And from just like seeing it on the timeline and seeing it described as 3-week-long workshop projects, sounds like there was a continuation of things you were doing anyway, like working with the community. Maybe like a sort of step up somehow.
Yeah, so that was, I think, 1992, and it was October. So, yes, the idea was that we put the tent up in 3 different towns in the valleys, which are always, described as culturally deprived, culturally and economically deprived, since the pits have been shut down in the early 80s. So there was money for regeneration of communities in the valleys, directly associated with pit closures, basically. So we did our shows up there at weekends, same. It was the end of our summer tour. We were doing The Defective Detective. And in the weeks, we worked with doing workshops with the local communities towards them performing at the weekends, and then did little shows on Saturday mornings before we did our show on Saturday afternoons for their parents. And I think I've got video footage of Rob Brydon walking on stilts up there. So somewhere we were put on the timeline. He was working as a young presenter for S4C television, and they came to do some filming in the tent, so we've got shots of him walking around. But that was just the most grimmest end of tour we've ever experienced, because it was October and it rained and rained and rained and rained. And I remember one morning coming into the tent and the actual stage was 6 inches underwater. So we had to, we'd all gone to bed. People had been getting up to check the tent in the night and let the water off the top of the tent, but not looking inside. And when we got to look inside in the morning, it was like a swimming pool. So we then had to come out and dig a massive trench around the outside of the tent to drain all that water off, and then get the floor cloth, which was basically on a tarpaulin, a painted canvas performing area, and try and hang it out to dry in time for showtime. And yeah, it was ridiculous. We were literally living in a lake while we were there.
There's something about running a circus which makes it sound like it's constantly like learning how to deal with things. Like, here's a problem. You've never encountered this problem before, exactly. How do we deal with it? We dig a trench around the outside, we let the water off, or...
Yeah, well, that's... I'd say there was no circus school to go to, and there's certainly no tent school to go to, so... It was literally having to solve issues as you say, on the grounds, when you're soaking wet and up to your knees in mud, and trying to figure out how to do things. And I think that's why those early days were such a good foundation for us now for our problem-solving skills. I don't describe things as problems, only like, what's the solution now? I think both Tom and I are extraordinarily good at problem solving. We've hit so many different things, and obviously experience helps that as well, doesn't it? So once you've had one vehicle stuck in the mud and you know that you can't pull it out on stakes, you need to find a solid enough tree long enough with a long enough cable or whatever, then the next time it happens, you deal with it quicker and easier. And you're always learning, because these things are always going to hit you. Something new is always going to come at you, so you have to be prepared to face any challenge and solve it on your feet, I guess.
And you said before that when you were founding the company, you wanted to get better all the time, you also wanted it to be fun. Is that part of the fun for you?
I think problem solving is really, for me, it is about new challenges all the time. It's like, I think I must be attention deficit or something. I get bored quite quickly, so I always want to be seeing what's next, where can we push it, from moving away from doing the tent work, it's like, okay, what's new, what do I want to find out, I want to find out, do some research in this field and see what's possible there. Yeah, having a new challenge is really important, I think, to keep us interested in what we're doing.
Sort of jumping a little bit in the timeline, because this could be at any point, but do you have sort of a greatest challenge story, like the hardest thing you had to solve, or the time when the most things went wrong and you had to fix them in a short time?
God, there's so many. I think a lot of the most challenging is dealing with people. So, you know, there are times when the people get really pissed off. If the situation you're in is really dire, then the people get pissed off. And if the people get pissed off, that's when it becomes the most challenging, because they're so important. The team is so important that, you know, so I can remember putting the barricade set up in Ponta Dawi in, you know, horrendous torrential rain, and people being up to their shins in mud around the stage but having to do it because we, you know, you can't stop if it's raining and wait for the dry day to put the set up, because the dry day is the day you're meant, or the next day is the day you're meant to be teching, and if you don't do the tech then you can't get to the show. So it has to be, you know, and then keeping people motivated when spirits in the team is really low is one of the toughest jobs I think we face. Keeping everybody happy.
Do you have sort of an understanding of how you do that? How you keep people happy?
I don't know how I do that, really. I don't always succeed at doing that. But I think it's something that, as managers, both Tom and I are fairly good at. Identifying... A, it's about putting the right team of people together in the first place. So it's about having a really good judge of personality, a judge of people, and to go, okay, well, this person's obviously a brilliant artist, but I don't think they're going to be a very good company member, and sometimes they need to be both. So I think we understand that, because the way we work as a company is very different from somebody just being in a theatre and going into a theatre and, you know, then going to your apartment and back to a different life, as opposed to living, working, sleeping, eating together. So it takes a certain type of person. If you've got the right people, then it's easier to manage the situation.
The sort of the parallel that just occurred to me while you were talking there is just like being a ship's captain. You know, like you're at sea for.
It's definitely like being a ship's captain.
You have to avert mutiny.
Yeah.
At all costs.
But I'd say it's part of it is, yeah. I use that analogy myself, but I call it the pirate ship, not the ship's captain. So yeah, I think that I see the company as pirates, and you've got to be a pirate to be on board. And sometimes the challenge is, you know, when the pirates want to mutiny, and they do, and you have to solve that. And the first year we were on tour with the Silver Tent, you know, they were working under incredibly difficult conditions, because we had no money and we were taking the risk about being able to upscale the company and upscale everything we knew. Everything, you know, we've been touring a small tent, and we were upscaling everything to make it bigger, so the challenge was much bigger, the expense was much bigger, the size of the company was bigger, and we knew we would struggle to make the budget meet. So people went through hard times on that tour, because we couldn't afford to empty the toilets as often as or have the right showers on site. Now the conditions are a lot better than they were then. And the pirates are less like pirates.
Did you ever have a full mutiny? Did it ever happen that people said we're not doing the show?
We've never had people say we're not doing the show because... And we've had conversations about whether we would or wouldn't do the show. And I remember in Birmingham when spirits were so low, we'd have been having... We've had several photographs in the show where Marco took a photo of the entire cast and the entire audience in one frame. So we were getting so little income from the show because it was stuck outside of the edge of Birmingham away from everyone and nobody knew about it and we hadn't spent enough money on marketing and all the rest of it. And we would... There's an equity rule that says if there's less performers... If there's less audience than performers, you don't have to do the show. And we had a debate because there was like 12 people in the audience or something. And one of the crew went, well, if we don't do it, we're just a bunch of cunts in the car park. That's all we are. What are we? We're circus performers, or we're a bunch of cunts in the car park. So let's go and do that show. And I always remember that now. It's like, yeah, you've got to do it. If it comes to the worst, I always tell people that story. If you don't do the show, what's the point? That's what the point is. To get there to do the show for the public.
Just sort of like we've gone off a little bit, but we were talking about Up the Valleys. And again, just from the timeline, it seemed like there was this little run of Up the Valleys, collaboration with the WNO, and doing a project with 30 school children after that Sports Day Circus. So just sort of like a little run of...
Yeah, I mean, obviously we were very experienced at teaching workshops already because we were doing one-off workshops in play schemes and schools and everywhere. And then Up the Valleys was us sort of being able to integrate that more into something a bit more developed, like an ongoing project towards a performance. So when Welsh National Opera asked us to get involved with a group of kids and train them in circus to do a performance with them, then we maintained that group and said let's have a regular group of, it wasn't just kids, it was adults, teenagers, youths, young people, all in the same room once a week that could practice circus and share skills. So that's how Splot State Circus was born.
One question about valleys before we move on from that is for a non-Welsh person, what are the valleys?
Who's a non-Welsh person?
Some international visitor to your website.
Okay, what are the valleys? The valleys are hills and vales in South Wales that were traditionally where all the coal mines were. So most people moved into the valleys for coal and steel industry. Over hundreds of years, those communities were built and developed from the 18th century. So, and that's where the money and the industry was based in South Wales. The money came from the mines.
And I think that when we were in Cardiff, you were describing a community project where the kids have been like setting fire to the
mountains. Yeah, the valleys is, yeah, notoriously, again, they don't have many opportunities in the valleys. It's quite, since the mines shut and the industry went down, they're, you know, one of the poorest areas of Wales and culturally deprived and socially, economically deprived. And yeah, there were a lot of kids setting fire to the... They live on the top of hillsides with, you know, there's a lot of mountains up there and they just used to burn the sides of the mountains for fun. There's always fires. There still is fires going on up there in the dry seasons. So we were asked to go and do projects to teach the kids to play with fire, to give them an opportunity to do it in a constructive way. So we did several projects up on the tops of mountains in South Wales, where we would go there and we would teach the kids to make fire clubs, juggle with them, swing them, fire staffs, and then we would create a performance that we would build a massive fire sculpture on the side of the mountain and do a fire show where all the kids would do the show for their community and set fire to the big fire show on the top of the mountain and feel proud of what they'd done and learn how to use fire constructively, and instead of setting fire to cars and mountains, practicing their circus skills. And go back up there and check in on them every now and again to make sure they still work. Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense, but it's kind of hard to imagine somebody initiating that project now.
I think they need it more than ever now. Yeah. Not so much money around now for that sort of thing.
Yeah, and so doing that little collaboration with the WNO and that becoming Sports Day Circus. Yeah, from the timeline, it seems like that was your first WNO collaboration or meeting point.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Basically, my friend Alan was working for the WNO Education Department and responsible for the community opera. So there was they were making a Splott community opera, and we were based in Splott, and he said, why don't we get a circus group together and put you in this show? And I was like, oh, I really don't want to do this. You know how much I hate opera, Alan. I've been dragged along to several of the Welsh National Opera productions and never made it past the interval. And he was like, but you know, you'll learn so much from doing it. He was like, okay, so we'll do it. And we did. We did that show. We did Cinderella 1 year, and we provided all the circus, not just kids, but adults from the community joined in with it. And the following year we did Calav's Quest, where we did it in Cardiff. Shall we just stop one there?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So we did it in Cardiff, and then we did it in Bristol. And in Bristol, we worked with some of the Bristol community that were just coming out of full-time, and the Albany artists, and Billy from Cirque Bijou came and joined in on that project, and there's a few of them that are now doing some quite good. And that gave us an opportunity to see how to do that sort of production on that scale.